Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. And we talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media, political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Now is the time for Legal Talk with Dina Sachs. Dina will guide us through the convoluted corridors of the American legal system, and she will explain how the people can reclaim their country and restore true democracy.
Hello, you're listening to Legal Talk with Dina Sachs on Revolution Radio. I'm Dina Sachs, and thank you for tuning in. This is my first show, and I created this show with a very specific purpose in mind, and that is to bring directly to the public what is going on in the courts in relation to the COVID mandate litigation. Is it on or not? There's a lot of misinformation out there right now, and people are wondering what's going on, why are the cases going in different directions? And so I decided to start this show to bring this information to the public. Just a little bit of background on me. I'm a lawyer since 1989. I have law degrees from USC and UC Berkeley, and I was a law professor for 20 years, specializing in constitutional law, tort law, and in particular, the First Amendment and the Liberty Clause. So what's going on right now with the COVID litigation is directly up my alley, and I'm seeing some rather strange things going on in the courts. So, and a little more background is a couple of years ago, I was on sabbatical. And during that period, I was writing a textbook and set it aside when I found some cases that were so unusual that I ended up writing two different books, one on Jeffrey Epstein and one on Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, and the Me Too movement. And what I found was in all of these cases, there were similar things going on in terms of our government helping the sexual predators. Well, one thing led to another. And in the end, the books exposed not just the fact that these very rich predators got away with it, but how our government took the side of the predators in these cases. For example, Alexandra Acosta helped Jeffrey Epstein in Florida. Cy Vance helped Harvey Weinstein in New York, and Bruce Castor helped Bill Cosby in Philadelphia. These are our prosecutors who were bound to prosecute these predators, but instead they helped them. And so when the whole COVID pandemic came about and I started seeing, you know, that there was going to be a push to vaccinate our people, I did a lot of research on the vaccine cases and found some of the similar problems going on there in relation to the courts just not following the law. And the lawyers oftentimes screwing up the pleadings and screwing up the cases. So I thought, what is going on here? So this is why I started this show, to talk first about what's happening in the lawsuits, and then we'll take it from there. Now today I have a phenomenal guest with me. Rainer Kulmuck is here from Germany, and some of you probably know him. He's become quite a celebrity online with his various videos describing what's really happening in this country and around the world relative to the COVID pandemic. So I'd like to introduce Rainer Kulmuck, and thank you so much for coming and being with me today.
It's a pleasure.
So first, you know, I want to say I met Rainer as part of a PCR group put together by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And we met via these Zoom calls we were having every week. And you know, after that, we just became friends, and Rainer has become quite famous. And it's kind of funny because I've had friends send me his videos and say, you know, look at this guy, you should get to know this guy. I'm like, wait a minute, I know this guy. And so I just want to ask you, Rainer, for the public, how did you get involved with the COVID pandemic controversies, and, you know, what got you so interested in this issue?
It was by accident, more or less. We were still, my wife and I were still living at our ranch in Northern California. And we're getting, in March of 2020, we were getting these phone calls from our friends and relatives explaining that there's this lockdown thing going on in Europe and in Germany. And I just couldn't believe it. I told my wife, let's just sit it out, stay here. It'll be over in a couple of months. And she said, no, this is much worse. We really have something to worry about. Then I got in touch with my good friend Wolfgang Wodarg, who's in Germany at least, and in Europe, he's a very famous doctor. He's a specialist, lung specialist, and he's the one who exposed the swine flu as being a total scam. This is 11 years ago. So I called him because it turned out that after about a year of anti-swine flu measures, including vaccines, it was just a mild flu. So I called him, and he said, this is like swine flu 2.0, only it looks much more dangerous, and we've got to do something about it. And he put me in touch with some of the people who really know what's going on as far as the medical intricacies and all the other things are concerned. And I got in touch with them, and it ultimately turns out that many of them have been interviewed by us by the Corona Committee, which my good friend Vivian Fisher and myself founded on July 10th of 2020, with the idea of finding out what the government and the mainstream media won't give us any answers to. One, how dangerous is the virus really? Turns out if there is a virus, of course, but it's no more dangerous than the common flu at 0.14 or 0.15 infection fatality rate. Next question then was, how reliable is the PCR test as far as being an indicator for infections? And it is not reliable because it cannot tell you anything about infections. It was used to create cases in order to get the public health emergency of international concern, which was necessary for those who are pushing this to use untested new drugs, vaccines they call them, on people. And the third question that we wanted answers to is, how much damage do the anti-corona measures do? And I ended up saying in one of my videos that this is a new era, a completely new crimes against humanity thing that we have to deal with. And then I explained where this comes from, where the term crimes against humanity comes from. It comes from the Nuremberg trials. And I guess that's what many people took as an indicator that there would be a Nuremberg 2.0. I prefer to not call it Nuremberg 2.0, though.
And there's so many moving parts to this pandemic and what's going on right now. And one of the things that I did, it was the summer of 2020, and I spent the summer researching all of the vaccine cases from the 1800s all the way through 2020 to get a feel for why children are forced to take vaccinations in school. Because when looking at the research and looking at the efficacy of some of the vaccines and the damage to the children, it just seemed odd to me why we're still doing this. For example, with polio, when I was researching polio, the research says that the only cases of polio in the last 30 years are from vaccines. So there's no wild polio anymore, and yet we're still vaccinating for polio. So that seems strange to me. So in going through all these cases from the 1800s all the way till 2020, when the article was finished, I couldn't help but notice that the lower courts were all misinterpreting the seminal case called Jacobson versus Massachusetts. And that's the 1905 case that all of the commentators are relying on, and all the lawyers and doctors on the side of the vaccine manufacturers are relying on. And I want to talk about the case for just a moment to make sure the public understands what that case was about. It's a very simple case and a very limited case, and that is the case that's been relied upon for over 100 years now to justify vaccine mandates, not just for children, but now for our armed forces, for police officers, even for any government entities today who are trying to force their people to get vaccinated or to lose their jobs. In Jacobson, what happened was there was an international pandemic called smallpox, and smallpox was a very serious disease. Smallpox killed anywhere from 20 to 60% of people in various villages and townships and whatnot, with an overall average death rate of around 30%. And there was a period where the baby's death rate was over 90%. So this is a very, very serious disease. Now, the vaccine available at that time for smallpox had been around for about 100 years in one form or another. It started with cowpox, and some researchers were noticing that people who worked around cows a lot and were exposed to cowpox would not get smallpox when it came through the town, or they'd get a mild case. So they started looking into this and figuring out we can inoculate people with a little bit of the virus, or with a similar virus, and they would have immunity to smallpox. And so this case came about in the, I guess it was 1903, when Massachusetts passed a law requiring all people to get vaccinated with the smallpox vaccine or to pay a $5 fine if they didn't get vaccinated. And it's really, really important to understand that it was an either or law. It wasn't thou shalt get vaccinated, we'll take your house, we'll take your job, we'll destroy your life. It was either get the vaccine or pay $5. So Jacobson refused to get the vaccine. He'd had a bad reaction as a child. His child had a bad reaction as well, and he just didn't want to do it. Another thing people don't realize about Jacobson is that he was running around town, going to the stores, going to the pubs, whatever. And so he wasn't just unvaccinated. He was almost flaunting it a little bit because he felt that the Liberty Clause protected him from a medical mandate. So eventually he was, you know, prosecuted, and he lost, and he was fined $5. So the court reached the U.S. I'm sorry, the case reached the U.S. Supreme Court on basically his request for a refund. He did not think he should have to pay the $5. And the court went through a great deal of analysis in terms of the death rate of smallpox, the efficacy of the vaccine, the fact that militaries all over the world were using the vaccine. And the court details the medical evidence in favor of the vaccine in the case itself in footnote one. And so the court ultimately decided, after going through this really detailed analysis, that in this situation, with a death rate so high, that the law was lawful. It was legal. He did not get a refund, but he also didn't get vaccinated. So that's the case. It's pretty simple, pretty limited case. Somehow that very simple and limited case, and the court said right in the at the end of the case, this holding is limited to the facts of this case. Another thing the court did in the beginning of the case was to recite the Massachusetts Charter, which basically had a provision that said that the individual's interests had to be subverted to the common good, and that was the policy of the state. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Constitution, our Constitution was created specifically to limit the federal government's powers. So Congress's powers are limited and enumerated by Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution because the framers feared the crown. The framers did not fear the states. In fact, when the Bill of Rights were created, they only applied to the federal government. The Bill of Rights did not bind the states. There was no right of First Amendment, no right Fourth Amendment, nothing against the state governments, only the federal government. And that's also important to understand when we start talking about the Biden mandates and why those were struck down. So this case was a simple case, very serious disease, killing a lot of people. And the court's decision was detailed, and they balanced the Liberty Clause against the state's interest to control health and safety of the people. And that's reserved for the states by the 10th Amendment. So basically anything not given to the to Congress in Article 1 is reserved to the states. The states have what we call general police powers. And Jacobson was a police power decision. And so again, after really looking at it carefully, the court said, you know, we're going to defer in this situation to the police power because the legislature has made a decision and we're going to uphold the decision and not give Mr. Jacobson his $5 back. Now, when I went through all the cases post-Jacobson, almost all which are lower court cases, because the one case, Zucht v. King, came out in, I think it was 1922, it was a school vaccination case. A lot of people are citing that to say that school vaccinations, you know, are lawful, they're not unconstitutional. Okay, that case was not a substantive case. This young lady, the student, challenged the delegation of the power of the state to the local authorities to issue a vaccine mandate. And the court said they could do that. But the court specifically said if she was going to challenge the actual substance of the law under the Liberty Clause, she needed to file a writ of certiorari. She didn't do that. So that case really is another very limited case, very, very small case. And those are the only two cases the U.S. Supreme Court has heard on vaccination mandates. So then I looked at this over the last, you know, 100 years, and every single lower court who looked at this issue mischaracterized Jacobson. They took it as a blanket delegation of authority from one branch, from the judiciary, to the legislatures to allow them to decide health policy. But that's not the way the Constitution was set up. The Constitution was set up to have different branches to oversee one another. And the branch bound to protect our liberties is the judiciary. So the courts are there to protect us from government overreaching. And notice also that the judges have life tenure. And the reason federal judges have life tenure is because we don't want them succumbing to pressure. So the government, the legislatures can, you know, sometimes get a lot of donations from certain companies or whatnot and can be influenced that way. And judges are bound to protect individual liberties against other branches of government when they overreach. And so what I saw in these cases was over and over again, the judiciary just saying, well, this is a legislative function. No, it's not. When people are saying a mandate violates our liberties, that calls the judiciary into play and requires the court to protect individual liberty against majoritarian influence, that is, the president and Congress, which are elected. And so this article I wrote is coming out as the lead article in the Florida State University Law Review in April of 2022. And really what it's about is exposing the lower court's failure to do their job. And I argue that the pendulum has swung so far away from the judiciary protecting our rights that something needs to change. And it gets even worse. We were talking the other day about the National Childhood Injury, National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which was signed in 1986 by Ronald Reagan. What was happening was the kids were getting so sick from vaccination in the schools, and the lawsuits were so expensive. The vaccine manufacturers got together when Ronald Reagan was in office and said, we're going to stop researching vaccines. We're going to stop producing them. We can't afford the judgments. Kids are getting really damaged. We have to pay for them. We can't do this anymore. And during that period, we were on the cusp of biological warfare. And we needed the big pharma, the vaccine manufacturers, to continue to research, because if we were caught with no, you know, weapons on our side to fight these, you know, bioweapons, we would be in big trouble. So Ronald Reagan was in a terrible position. The Justice Department was begging him not to sign the act, to veto it, because they said what's going to happen is you're going to see a lot of problems. There's going to be too much power among the vaccine manufacturers. We don't immunize a whole industry in this country. We don't immunize any industry in this country. But Ronald Reagan signed it under pressure, with mixed feelings, because he was concerned about us not having the vaccine research at our disposal when we may need it for bioweapons if we get attacked. After that, what happened was vaccines grew exponentially. When I was a child, I think I had 6 vaccines. You know, today, the average American child is subjected to about 70 doses of vaccines in schools. And it's become very lucrative. The act only protected against products liability, meaning unavoidable defects in vaccines, because, you know, medicine isn't an exact science. And then, of course, many more vaccines were demanded. The legislators often had stock in the same companies that were manufacturing the vaccine. And you can see the problem with collusion between the very wealthy vaccine manufacturers who are the same, they're big pharma. The same companies manufacturing Vioxx and Bextra. And we all know, I hope we all know what happened with those drugs and how many people were injured and killed with those drugs. After that, lots and lots and lots of injuries occurred. But they set up this thing called, we call it the vaccine court. It's a court that sits in Washington, D.C. It's a federal court. And when I heard about this vaccine court, I asked about 10 lawyer friends of mine. I said, have you heard of the vaccine court? And everyone said, what's the vaccine court? I said, well, how can none of us know about the vaccine court? We've been practicing law for 20, 30 years, and we've never heard of the vaccine court. Well, that's where all of the injuries are funneled now, through the vaccine court, and it's kept very quiet. It was supposed to work like workers' compensation. It was set up as an alternative for vaccine injuries. And it has, you know, some of the same aspects of workers' compensation, except it's not working at all. They don't get discovery. It's kept quiet. It's done in secret. And the kids are often not getting remedies. And even though it was supposed to be like workers' comp, and workers' comp works by forcing employers to pay for workers' injuries, like an automatic recovery if someone gets injured in the job, but they get that in lieu of a lawsuit. So they give up their right to a civil trial, but instead they have an automatic recovery based on tables and whatnot. Like, you know, if you lose a hand, it's X amount. You get, you know, you can become disabled. It's a certain amount based on your disability. Well, it hasn't worked out that way with the vaccine court and with children. So what's happened is lawyers then started filing negligence lawsuits to, you know, try to get remedies for children who are very seriously injured sometimes by vaccines. And what they did was went under a different theory of liability, negligence, meaning the injuries are avoidable. Because it's not negligence if it's unavoidable. Negligence means the manufacturer took an unreasonable risk of harm and a foreseeable injury came to pass because they were unreasonable in seeing it and failing to protect against it. Well, many of us were shocked when a case got to the U.S. Supreme Court, a case called Brusewitz, and the U.S. Supreme Court in 2011 decided that the National Vaccine Injury, I'm sorry, National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act was extended to cover avoidable injuries as well. So it went from covering just unavoidable injuries to avoidable injuries based on negligence. So people went kind of crazy over that decision. And Justice Sotomayor wrote a terrific dissent saying, this is horrible, basically. We're accepting children to so much injury now. And if it's avoidable, the vaccine manufacturers, like every other product manufacturer, should be liable. So that's what's happened. So now all we have is, you know, I guess if you prove fraud, you can still get to court. But the vaccine manufacturers are making enormous amounts of money. They're enormously influential. I cite in my article forthcoming some of the statistics on how many of our members of Congress own stock in Merck and other, you know, companies making it. It's just really a problem. So we really, really need the courts now more than ever to step in and protect us from these vaccine mandates. But it's not working out so well. I mean, some of the cases have gone our way, some have not. And Reiner, tell us a little more about, you know, your position on what's happening in the courts, whether it's here or Germany. What are you seeing right now?
Well, in Germany and throughout Europe, it's very clear that most of the courts of law are completely incapable of dealing with these cases. I call them the other side, those who are pushing this, we now call it the plandemic, based on what we learned from all these expert witnesses, including Dr. Mike Eden, former vice president of Pfizer, Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine technique, Catherine Austin Fitz, former deputy or assistant secretary of Housing and Urban Development. So we looked at these, at the facts, and we tried to get to the courts, but it is next to impossible to get a ruling in Europe, in the European courts, to get a ruling in favor of the plaintiffs, because as the other side has more or less stacked the courts and, bought politicians, mainstream media, lawyers,
the same thing going on in our country, the exact same set of circumstances with the media being one-sided.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm the only law professor in the country. I just resigned in 2020, but I was the only law professor in the country coming out and saying, wait a minute, this is a violation of our liberty interests. And everyone else is just going along with the mainstream agenda and narrative, because if you don't, your job is at risk, whether you're a law professor, a doctor, it's out of control. And I want to point out, just because you're talking about this right now, the same people are involved in the media, vaccine, investments, and now farmland. And I just want to, you know, when I wrote my book on Jeffrey Epstein, I thought it was fascinating that he had this relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. So Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein were friends. And this was after Jeffrey Epstein was convicted of soliciting prostitution from a minor, but there's a lot of federal charges that should have been pursued and they weren't. There was a secret deal cut behind the scenes by Alexander Acosta and Alan Dershowitz, and they did something never done before. They had this non-prosecution agreement where they said that everyone who's ever been associated with Jeffrey Epstein is immune. It's unheard of. You don't get to immunize the potential defendants in a case without, one, naming them, and two, saying what the crime is they committed that they're going to get immunity for. And keep in mind, Alan Dershowitz himself was immune under the agreement he created. So there's all sorts of weird stuff going on with the Jeffrey Epstein case. And one of the weirdest aspects, I thought, was his relationship with Bill Gates. I thought, well, what on earth would Bill Gates want to do with Jeffrey Epstein? Well, they shared a fascination for transhumanism. And this all relates back to what's happening right now.
Exactly.
Bill Gates became the number one investor in vaccines. Well, now, why would he do that? He's got all this money already. Why does he want to invest in vaccines? Well, because they're so, so lucrative. It's an industry that's been immunized by the law. So there's no repercussions for creating dangerous or terrible products. It's hugely lucrative. They're immune. They have control of, you know, our legislators, in my opinion, because of the amount of overlap between the investments and the voting on these mandates. And Bill Gates did something else that's really weird to me. He bought so much farmland in the last 2 years. He, I think, bought about 250,000 acres of farmland in our country. He is now the number one farmland owner in our country. Why would he want to own farmland? And he's already number one vaccine investor. And I don't know if you're following me here, but there seems to be a desire to be in control of our bodies. And one of the things about this vaccine that I find so disturbing is that the definition of vaccine was changed by the CDC, what was it, August of 2021? Mm-hmm. Because these mRNA vaccines, they are not traditional vaccines. They could not be called a vaccine under the traditional definition. Because a vaccine is basically putting a disabled or a weakened portion of the actual antigen into your body to trigger an immune response. So when you get hit with the real virus, the real antigen, your body will have, you know, some immunity already and be able to fight it better. That's not what these do. The mRNA vaccines, or mRNA, I'd call it therapeutic medication.
Experimental
medication. Sends a signal into your body for your body to manufacture the spike protein of COVID-19.
Yes.
So for the first time ever, you're not being, introduced to your body is not a part of the actual virus. It's actually telling your body to make the spike protein of the virus so your body can then create antibodies to that spike protein. But keep in mind, the spike proteins are different on the variants. And this is why natural immunity is so much better. You fight the entire virus naturally versus having your body create a little tiny piece of the virus and fighting that. So tell us more about the mRNA technology and what it does to your body.
Well, to make a very long story very short, one of the experts that we spoke with, she's a biologist, Professor Kemmerer of Würzburg University, one of the Bavarian universities. She and others took a close look at what's in these doses and in the vials, rather. And she found that the mRNA vaccines, not the other two, there's the Janssen by Johnson & Johnson, and there's AstraZeneca, but the mRNA technique, what it does, it literally shuts off the immune system. Mm-hmm. And that will sooner or later cause grave, grave damage. The more shots you get, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
It's like Russian roulette.
You're right. Well, and one thing I just want to point out very quickly is I was listening to some oncologists online talk about what was happening to their patients. And they're talking about their cancer patients who had been in remission for years. And then after they got the mRNA vaccine, the cancer came back. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, what's happening? Why is this happening? What is the mechanism by which the vaccine would trigger a resurgence of cancer? And what they opined was that when this mRNA chemical gets into your body, it shuts down your immune system for a little bit because it has to get into your cells. So it has to get rid of your natural resistance for a little while to get in. And during that period, these doctors opine the cancer gets in as well and resurfaces and becomes, you know, dangerous to the body again. So that's just, you know, this it just is amazing to me that the public doesn't even know it's not really a vaccine because that hasn't been advertised. It hasn't been picked up on the mainstream media. It's just, and back to Jeffrey Epstein, I keep bringing this back because it is all related in a sense, because what happened with Jeffrey Epstein was the media had a certain narrative. I'll give one example of that very quickly. When he supposedly died in his jail cell, and first they were saying it was a suicide, and they all were saying it was a suicide, and CNN was insisting it was a suicide when the medical examiner hadn't even made that determination. And the CNN correspondent was arguing with the New York, medical examiner who hadn't made a decision yet, which was strange. They pushed this narrative of suicide, even though there was evidence he had complained that he was attacked in his cell. Mm-hmm. And there was evidence that he was being subjected to hatred in the prison. This was the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York. And he actually was paying off other prisoners to keep him safe. He was putting money in their commissary account. So this stuff that came out, and then, miraculously, on the day that he supposedly died, some say he was murdered, some say that he killed himself, all the cameras went down, or were down in the center. There was one outside of his cell, that one went down, all of them went down. And the people who are familiar with this, MCC in New York, says this place is fully under surveillance. The minute you walk on the prison property, you're on camera. So how is it possible that they all went down? We have no footage of anyone entering Jeffrey Epstein's cell, exiting his cell. We don't know if he walked out the front door. We don't know where he is, what happened. There were so many strange things about that. And the media all carried the narrative, oh, he committed suicide. when there was conflicting evidence and the stories about his, you know, his complaints about being attacked were just swept under the rug. And, you know, people at first were saying, well, he was murdered. He was, you know, they're calling Clinton, was a hashtag Clinton body count, because they were saying people wanted him dead. But back to the idea that the media takes a position. Remember, Jeffrey Epstein was very closely tied to Ghislaine Maxwell. And she's the one who recruited Virginia Roberts, who became one of his main sex slaves in Trump's property, Mar-a-Lago. And Maxwell had actually snuck on the property to look for girls for Jeffrey Epstein. But her father, so I'm getting to, her father owned a media company in the United Kingdom. I think it was the Daily Mirror. And he actually stole the pension from all of his employees when he became the owner. And he was found floating by the Canary Islands a few years later after it came out that he had stolen like a ton of money, millions and millions of dollars. But what I'm seeing in my research is a connection between the media owners and the people who own, you know, big businesses who are being, you know, they're being cast in a light that isn't accurate to keep the public kind of, you know, in the dark about what they're doing. So you're going to see media companies owned by the same people who own big pharma or car companies or, you know, some of the people who involved with Jeffrey Epstein were also people looking to buy media companies, because the way they keep getting away with things is to keep the information from the public. And I go into detail in the last chapter of the Jeffrey Epstein book, Is Jeffrey Epstein Really Dead? It's called Why the Evidence Just Doesn't Seem to Pan Out. And among other many pieces of evidence, not one American media company even discussed, where'd he go? Where's his body? Where's he buried? So a couple companies came over from Europe and asked some questions, and there was nothing but sketchiness, right? He doesn't have a tombstone because they say, oh, well, someone could come and dig him up in retaliation for what he did to girls. But this mausoleum where he was supposedly laid to rest, $250,000 a plot. $250,000. You don't think they have security for that kind of? I'm pretty sure they do. Another thing is Mark Epstein was there, and one of the reporters asked, you know, can you just confirm that your brother was laid to rest here? And I can't even say exactly what he said because it's part of George Carlin's seven filthy words. But he said, basically, F you, I'm not answering your questions. Well, that doesn't sound right. I mean, if your brother was recently killed or committed suicide, and the reporter's just asking you to confirm where his body was, like, he wouldn't even answer the question. So you know, the media didn't even carry these stories. The media didn't discuss the controversy over whether he was attacked in the prison, whether he was suicidal. His brother and his attorney said he wasn't suicidal at all. In fact, we expected to get him off. They were pulling up the non-prosecution agreement, you know, that deal between Dershowitz and Alexander Acosta, and they were trying to use it in New York. And they had convinced Jeffrey Epstein, we're going to get you off this. So Jeffrey Epstein didn't have a reason to kill himself. This is what his lawyers said. So we're not hearing any of this at all from our mass media. So relating it back to the vaccine situation again, I'm seeing the same dynamic.
They're creating their own narrative.
They're creating a narrative. They're reiterating the stuff. Oh, I was sitting here watching the news, local news in L.A., and they keep pushing the vaccines, you know, go get vaccinated. And they're saying they're completely safe and effective, completely safe and effective. And I about fell off my chair saying, are you kidding me? Yeah. We know there's been so much death. And I learned from you, Reiner, on one of the PCR Zoom meetings with the Kennedy group, when you were describing how people were dying after getting vaccinated in Germany. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't heard that yet in this country. We still haven't heard about people really dying. But two people in my family died after getting the vaccine. So I know that it's true. One of them died 3 days after her first dose of Moderna. And she was older. She was 84. Her name was Joy. But she was healthy. And dying 3 days after the first dose of a vaccine seems pretty obviously cause and effect to me. She died of a massive hemorrhage in the brain caused by a clot. Well, that's exactly how people are dying from the vaccines.
Exactly.
My mom died of a massive hemorrhage in her brain 96 days after her second dose of Pfizer. And people are saying, oh, well, 96 days, that's too much. It must not relate. And I'm like, you guys, my mom had no history of any of this. And she had a massive, massive brain clot that burst in her brain so big there was no way she could possibly live through it. I learned through this situation that when blood hits the brain, it kills the brain cells. Mm-hmm. So there's no, and this is a small hemorrhage. You can maybe suck out the blood if it's close enough to the surface. It's in the middle of your brain, and it's a big bust. It's like a dam bursting. It's terminal. You're not going to live past it. Right. So I personally know two. I actually know a third person who died after taking the vaccine. And this story is worth sharing. This is one of my best friends from high school. Her name's Michelle, and she worked with a guy named Tom at the dental office. And Tom was kind of squawking up and down. You know, I can't get the vaccine. I'm too healthy. I'm only 62. And they're telling me I have to get in line because they're giving it to all the older people first. And he was squawking about how, you know, I pay my taxes. I should get to take the vaccine. You know, I should be in line for this vaccine. So I think it was 4 days after his second dose, he had a massive brain hemorrhage and died. So, and then another guy in my hometown, Big Harbor, also died. So people are talking about it, but you're not hearing it on the news. And I heard it first from you. So we're seeing the same kind of sort of cover up via the mainstream media that we saw with Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein. I mean, that I won't even begin to get on that right now, because I think Harvey Weinstein's a little bit removed from the vaccine controversy compared to Jeffrey Epstein, who was into this transhumanism and what can we do to the human body. And another reason why he wouldn't commit suicide, in my opinion, he believed that if you keep changing out body parts, you can live forever, right? This whole transhumanism thing. So I'm not buying the suicide thing with Jeffrey Epstein. I'm not even buying that he's dead necessarily. I don't know for sure, but none of us know for sure. But I point that out just to say the mainstream media has consistently over the last, I don't even know how long, 20 years,
probably
for sure.
Probably decades, yes.
For decades, has not been serving the public at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's not much we can do about it except turn to alternative media outlets and do our own research. And I did my own research for the vaccine stuff, and that's why I wrote the article that's coming out in the Florida State University Law Review, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I couldn't believe, you know, the cases. And then I want to jump up because I told the listeners we're going to talk about the cases that's happening now. And this is what we're kind of getting, where I was trying to bring this up about the past and all the lower courts mischaracterizing Jacobson, misapplying the law. The judges just sort of shrugging their shoulders and saying, well, you know, this is kind of a legislative thing. You know, the balance of the branches, the balance among the branches being completely turned upside down with the judiciary just not reviewing the right of liberty against these vaccine mandates. And now we come to these COVID mandates. And I'll just quickly dispose of Biden's mandate, because it's not worthy of more than a quick disposition. He doesn't have the power to issue a general health policy. His powers are also in the Constitution. He tried to operate through OSHA, which is an entity that was created to protect workers in the workplace by Congress. So for OSHA to have the power to do this, to create a health policy, Congress would have to have it, because something created by Congress can't have more power than Congress itself. Well, Congress doesn't have that power. That's the power reserved to the states in the 10th Amendment, general health and safety. So, and on top of, and the Fifth Circuit struck it down, and in a very, I think, reasoned opinion explaining, this is outside of the Constitution. These are not the people who get to do these things. This is a state issue. The federal government doesn't get to decide day-to-day health policy. OSHA was out of line. And on top of that, OSHA didn't follow its own procedures. And OSHA took a position in relation to this vaccine mandate that was contrary to its prior positions. So there are all sorts of problems with the federal mandates, and that's why they've been struck down. And I think that the federal mandates will not be revived. I think they will be, you know, they were struck down by the Fifth Circuit. And then what happened with the losers in the case, you know, the Biden administration and those people engaged in an unusual rule where if numerous circuit courts, those are federal appellate courts, are coming to like different conclusions or have the same types of issues pending, you can consolidate. And what they do is it's a random selection among the circuits who have the cases pending, and they pick one circuit to decide all the cases together. So So the Biden administration thought, let's try that crapshoot, right? Let's see if we got, might, you know, strike it rich and get the Second Circuit or the Ninth Circuit. Well, they didn't. They got the Sixth Circuit. So the Sixth Circuit upheld the Fifth Circuit's ruling, and the Biden mandates are dead for now, as they should be, because of the structure of the Constitution. This is a simple structural issue. It has nothing to do with individual liberties per se. It has to do with who has the power to regulate vaccine policy. And it isn't Congress, and it isn't the president. It is the states through their rulemaking bodies. And so the big fight is going to be the fight that was, you know, started with Jacobson versus Massachusetts. And that is whether the vaccine mandates issued by state or local governments overreach and, you know, violate people's liberty interests to avoid medical procedures they do not want. And I have a pretty strong position on that, having stayed liberty for the last 20 years. I think it's an outrage. And it's an outrage for so many reasons, only part of which is the efficacy and safety of this vaccine. I mean, it's still experimental.
And the necessity. We don't even need them.
I mean, people
because there are alternative methods of treatment.
And another thing that I actually realized fairly recently was what happened when the doctors were trying to prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And one of the studies described in Bobby Kennedy's new book called The Real Anthony Fauci is that, well, first of all, they stopped, the FDA like put a hold on these medications that are very effective if taken in the first couple of days of getting COVID. But you have to take them right away. You can't wait. So what Kennedy was saying in his book was that they created these studies where they didn't give the COVID patients the hydroxychloroquine until 2 weeks after the initial infection. Well, it's not going to work. So they actually create studies to show, well, it doesn't work and it's not a good medication, but they knew going into these studies, and they manipulated the timing of the medication to make sure it wouldn't work, so they could say to the public, oh, it doesn't work, we shouldn't be prescribing it. And there's certain doctors who were going crazy because they said, look, we need to save people. But they shut down the medicines they knew worked and instead push the vaccine agenda and all the money being made. I think one of them, Merck, one of them made $15 billion in 2020 alone off vaccines. So this is a really dangerous period in our country. And just to put it into a little bit more context, Naomi Wolf wrote a book in 2007 called The End of America. And what she did is she distilled all of the fascist takeovers throughout history into these various factors and what in every fascist, which calls a fascist shift, they all involve certain things. One of the things they involved is an emergency. There's always an emergency.
So right? You have to create one.
Yeah, well, and then there's always a shutdown of normal democratic processes, normal legislative processes. The courts are shut down. There's emergency orders. There's bypassing of all the democratic processes that normally safeguard the public from government misconduct and government overreaching. They also shut down First Amendment rights. Now, look what happened with the COVID-19 pandemic. Look what happened. They shut down the churches, right? That's the First Amendment right to attend church. They shut down, Facebook is an enormous problem. Of course, they're not the government, but they, you know.
But almost.
Well, because they've taken over the sidewalk picketing aspect of our society, they do seem to perform sort of a government type function, but still they are private. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to understand that, because what's happening in our courts right now is lawyers are, you know, suing private entities saying you're bound by the Constitution, like the Kaiser case. Mm-hmm. And I talked to some of these lawyers. I said, you guys, that is not state action. You can't sue Kaiser under the Constitution. It's really hard to find state action. Basically, you have to be the government. It doesn't matter if Kaiser has members, executives of Kaiser are sitting on the board of the CDC. It's not good. We don't like it. But that's not going to create a situation where Kaiser is bound by the Constitution. The only time a private entity can really be bound by the Constitution would be something like if the FBI hired a private investigator to go into a property and spy on someone and then sell the footage back to the FBI. Now you have state action, because you have the private person is an agent of the state. But anything short of that, if you look at all the cases which I have to teach the class, you can't turn a private entity into the government absent something like that. There's an old case called Marsh versus Alabama from, I think, 1946, where a private person owned the entire town. And in that case, the court said, you have to allow sidewalk picketing because you own the entire town. And so, you know, governments can't shut down the First Amendment rights. And so if you buy a town, you have to let the people speak. That's a very limited case. It hasn't been extended. So I'm looking at these cases today on the vaccine mandates, and I'm thinking, what is going on? I'm seeing some of the same mistakes among the attorneys, filing the lawsuits, not bringing the best claims, not bringing the claims that are going to work, and instead bringing claims that are going to fail. And so we, Ryan and I were talking behind the scenes saying, are they trying to lose these cases? Are they trying to create case law and precedent like all the stuff in the last 100 years where the cases go the wrong way for the wrong reasons? Some of the times the attorneys didn't put the evidence in the courthouse. They just didn't submit the evidence. Other times the court would say they're going to apply strict scrutiny, the hardest test for the government to pass. And that's the Roe versus Wade test, which has now been, of course, you know, dismantled to some in some respects. But the court would say, I'm going to adopt strict scrutiny, and that's a three-pronged test. The government has to prove, shifts the burden of proof onto the government to prove they had a compelling interest and the means they chose were necessary and there were no less restrictive alternatives. And so I've never, ever, ever seen a court say, I'm going to apply strict scrutiny and say, I found a compelling purpose, I'm done. It's like, whoa, there's two more prongs here. There's two more aspects of the test. Blew it off. So you're seeing stuff in the vaccine cases that are so weird. I mean, the whole industry is weird. The whole industry is immunized. That's weird. No other product is immunized like that. Mm-hmm. It's a dangerous product that kills people. There's this sense that, you know, it's often its own little world, this whole vaccine manufacturing industry. Mm-hmm. And our people are so programmed to think, oh, vaccines are good. Vaccines are good. That's part of the narrative. And they're not questioning this vaccine and these mandates. I mean, some people are, but a lot of people aren't. We have a cognitive association between, you know, vaccines are good. We've learned that from childhood. And so I'm seeing some of the same, and this is weird to me this time around because I wrote this article. It's online already. I've given it to Bobby Kennedy like three times. I've given it to numerous lawyers he's working with. And yet I'm seeing these same lawyers bring these lawsuits and fail to state the claims correctly, fail to state the claim in a way that will actually, you know, win on a motion to dismiss. And I'm thinking, what on earth is going on here? So what do you think, Reiner, is happening? Why are people filing lawsuits? Are they just not qualified? Do they not know constitutional law? Or are they trying to fail?
I hope not. I know what's going on in Europe. It's not the lawyers who are not doing their job. It's the courts of law that are not functioning anymore because, as I said, this is not about money. The people who are behind this have more than enough money, but they're using money to bribe people, politicians, the media, lawyers, everyone, more or less. And in particular, obviously, they're trying to stack the courts. In Germany, for example, the president of the highest court in the country, the Constitutional Court, he's one of these people. He's one of the people who used to work. He was a senior partner in a larger law firm that invented one of the worst financial scandals. I'm not going to go into the details of this, but he's very, very close to the government. He used to be a politician who was extremely close to our chancellor, who's not really our chancellor. So that is what's causing the problems in Europe. I don't know what's going on here, but I do believe that the judiciary here is in general much more independent than it is in Germany.
And some courts are putting their foot down and handling the cases properly. I'm going to go into cases more. It's one of the reasons why I started the show. I'm also going to say I will be filing lawsuits myself because of my knowledge of constitutional law and I know how to navigate these issues. But we need funding. So I will be putting up a donate button eventually with Revolution Radio. And just a reminder, we depend here on the donations of our listeners. So if you can donate, please do. But if you can't, that's okay too. We want you to still listen and be a part of us. So, you know, were looking basically to get involved in these cases, and it's very expensive, which is why you're seeing, you know, some of these, you're seeing millions in donations to like Children's Health Defense, Bobby Kennedy's group. And I'm not seeing a, you know, so far a lot of success in the lawsuits over there. And we talked about briefly one of their lawyers working over there, which is just plain bizarre. They have a man working there who went to an unaccredited online law school. And, you know, I've been a law professor for 20 years, and I can just say, I don't know anyone who went to an unaccredited online law school. And that seems extremely strange to me that Kennedy would associate with someone like that for these incredibly important cases, trying to, you know, clarify our liberty interests in the face of this horrific, you know, vaccine mandate situation. But I do want to point out something else really quickly. You know, you said it wasn't about money, but I think there's something going on that needs to be really recognized by our people. There's been enormous shifts in wealth during the, in 2020. All of us lost, what, 20 to 30% of our 401ks. All of us right around, what was it, April or so, something like that in 2020. During that same period when the middle class, the professional class were losing a lot of their savings, the billionaires were making enormous amounts of money. So basically all of our 401k money shifted toward Gates, Bezos, Musk. I mean, this is frightening because the people who have the 401ks are the lawyers and the doctors and the professionals who can fight in court. Most people can't. It's too expensive. Mm-hmm. They're taking power from those of us who can fight back.
Yeah.
And it's going to the billionaires who are already so ridiculously rich. And that, to me, is a big part of this. We need to recognize they're not just trying to take away our liberties. They're trying to take away our ability to fight back.
They're trying to destroy the economy. This is not a side effect. This is intent. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to gain control. And another thing that's the second level, which is really important to understand, this is truly about life and death. You have to understand that. If you don't understand it, you're not going to make the right decisions. They're going to try one of the aspects you alluded to, a transhumanism. One of the aspects of this is gaining total control over the people by what is called population reduction, by playing around with our DNA through these our mRNA shots.
And this, I just don't think the vaccine mandates are about health at all. I mean, we just said if you're really concerned about health, if you look at, I've spoken to doctors who are experts in COVID, and they say, you know, certain vitamins, certain deficiencies are highly correlated.
Vitamin
if you
D,
get
C,
sick, get on ivermectin right away, get on hydroxychloroquine right away, you'll be fine. That's not what we're doing. So we're going to be, I won't.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
You. If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
The pill has been taken. Blinders are off. Are we in the end game? Or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened with no choices? Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve.
The Red Pill. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Check it out.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Narco-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Hey, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and...